Welcome to our latest edition of our audio and video podcasts. I'm Stephen Tubbs, Monday through Friday, 4 to 7 p.m. Mountain Time on 710 KNUS here in Denver, and we appreciate your attention and interest to this most bizarre story. As many of you are aware, if you've seen these episodes, Dr. James Craig, who is innocent as he sits in the Aurora detention facility awaiting his June 3rd preliminary hearing, he is an innocent man. But I knew him. He was my dentist. I made eye contact with him at the last court appearance. And in the times before, the last time I had looked him in the eye was, as I mentioned, I don't say this to be funny, it was for a root canal. I did know the late Angela Craig, not well, but did work with them when I was at another radio station for years and years doing their radio advertising. And I was a patient for many years as well at Summerbrook Dental. This is going to be a different episode of the podcast. We've got a terrific guest who actually found us, and I want to bring in and welcome Dr. Mike Fricke. He is an arsenic expert. And Mike, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast series.
Hi, Stephen.
It's good to have you. Can you just say, and this is not for my benefit at all, but I just find it bizarre, you know, as we record this on a Thursday, on May 4th, earlier in the week on the regular radio program, we get a phone call from you, and my producer says, there's an arsenic expert on, and of course, doing our due diligence, I wanted to make sure that you were who you were. But how did you find out about this whole story, and especially what we're doing on the podcast series?
So arsenic is my thing. I spent 8 years in graduate school and then as a postdoc with US EPA researching arsenic. And arsenic research efforts go on all over the world. There are many groups that are devoted specifically to arsenic. I haven't worked with arsenic in the laboratory since 2006, but I continue to follow the literature. And I do speaking as a ACS, American Chemical Society counselor.
And you actually found us because what? You have Google alerts for the word arsenic?
Right. Anytime arsenic is in the news, I get an email.
Yeah. So how do you become interested, involved, one of the leading experts, certainly that I've ever spoken with, about arsenic? And you had told us, I think, arsenic kind of found you, not the other way around. Talk about that.
I went to graduate school, University of Cincinnati, chemistry, and I wanted to do synthetic chemistry, which is making different molecules that are needed for whatever reason. And I ended up joining Joe Caruso's research group, and he was studying the arsenic metallome, which is the inorganic and organic different compounds of arsenic, different oxidation states. And these are present in food, in the air, in water, and in humans and animals.
I want to make something very clear as we get underway, and I have so many rudimentary basic questions about arsenic and arsenic in human history over thousands of years. But I want to make sure that everyone that you watching that you know, first and foremost, we say always at the top of our podcast series, and I try to remember to conclude with it as well, it is not lost upon me that there are six children involved in this horrendous case. And I know I speak on behalf of Dr. Fricke. He knows that as well. In fact, and I don't mean to put this out there and make you embarrassed at all, but you told me on the radio, you actually contributed to the Angela Pray Craig Children's Fund. And I think that says a lot about your character. And I appreciate that. And I know that maybe for some of you going, oh, they're just trying to be, again, another salacious headline grabbing story. That's not what this is about. But this is unlike, in 33 plus years of my career, unlike any story that I certainly have ever covered. So how do you find out, and we're going to get into some of the history of arsenic, et cetera, but how do you find out about this particular case where, again, Dr. James Craig allegedly poisons his wife over the course of days? The allegations are through her protein drinks. How do you find out about this?
Well, I heard about it when it originally made the news. I found out about the podcast just by doing a random search of the word arsenic on Spotify. And then I listened to the entire podcast, first to last episode, in one sitting on Tuesday.
Wow, well, that's an honor, and I appreciate that. And now here you're part of, I believe, episode number 13. You know, the preliminary hearing is coming up. We've read so much of the affidavit, more than 50 pages, et cetera. I want to get a little bit of your take toward the end of this podcast about just the evidence that has been presented by a police department to a district attorney's office. But if we can, let's take a pause on that. And I want to go back in history. The traces of arsenic, talk about Otzi and 3300 BC. Talk about this mummified remains, and our viewers are going to be able to at least see a little bit about this. Talk about it.
Sure. Otzi was discovered in 1991 on the border of Austria and Italy at 10,000 feet. He was emerging from a snowpack in the glacier as it melted away, and his body was in such good condition that it was reported to the police as a potential homicide. As they started to remove him from the ice, some of his tools, such as the copper axe and some of his other clothes, were much, much older, and eventually he was determined to be over 5,000 years old. He was in a pocket in the rocks. Usually a glacier sweeps everything away. But the way he was under the ice, he had about a mile of ice above him. It flattened him, but he didn't move for the last 5,000 years. So he is now the most studied corpse in the world. There's a museum near where he was found. He's named after the town Otzi where he was found. And he has been studied every possible way that could be studied. And his hair and fingernails contained very high levels of arsenic. Any kind of keratin rich part of the body will absorb the arsenic and accumulate there. And when they saw the levels of arsenic in his hair and fingernails, they had assumed that that's how he had died. Later on, an MRI showed that there was an arrowhead in his back. So he was shot and killed by one of his friends. But the way that they believe he got the arsenic in his system is by copper smelting. His axe was made out of copper, and copper was the first metal to be used by humans. And the reason for that is because you don't have to reach a certain temperature to make copper metal. You take some copper ore like malachite, dig a small hole, and build a fire in it. You add, grind up the malachite and then cover the fire with some turf, and then you can blow air into it with a leather bellows. This creates a reducing atmosphere, and it's actually the carbon monoxide that oxidizes to carbon dioxide and reduces the copper from the malachite to the copper metal. Mm-hmm. After it burns out, you get the copper at the bottom, and you can shape it into weapons.
Yeah, and you had told us on our radio program that this was basically one of the first kind of, I guess, modern day OSHA cases of an occupational hazard. Because of obviously time purposes, you know, I want to fast forward, you know, thousands of years. And when did we start in the more modern age seeing arsenic? I know, for example, the Victorian age, there's a green pigment. Talk about the slide that we'll put up on that.
Okay, so this is a pigment that was discovered in the 1700s. At this time period, we didn't have a good green coloring. So when this compound was discovered, it's copper acetoarsenite. It was a rich green color that did not fade, and it became fashionable, much like avocado-colored appliances in the 1970s. It was called Paris Green or Shields Green, became very fashionable in the 1830s, and it was fashionable for decades. Queen Victoria had it removed from Windsor Palace in the 1870s as people started to realize that there may be some toxicity to this arsenic pigment.
It's truly amazing. Again, our guest, one of the nation's foremost experts in arsenic, joining us here on our latest episode, video and audio podcast. And we appreciate your time and interest as we still are weeks away from Dr. James Craig's preliminary hearing. You also have mentioned, and you've lectured, by the way, you know, you've lectured so much, you've been involved in many, many studies and papers over the years. You can find Dr. Fricke on LinkedIn as well. Talk about what is the Poison Book Project.
So this was part of the Paris Green fad, and there were bookbinders in England. They would, before the 1830s and so, they would use leather bindings. It was very expensive, but when they moved to cloth bindings, they would use different colors, and there were many books that were in the green color. I held one in my hands. I went and visited the Poison Book Project at Winterthur Library and Museum and spoke with the project director, Melissa Tadone. But these books still exist. They're on shelves in libraries throughout the country and the world. And she was the first to notice a book that she was preparing to exhibit, and it was flaking green, and they did some XRD studies and determined it was the arsenic pigment. And she's been instrumental in getting the word out to libraries and private collectors around the world that if you have green books from this time period, you should really get them checked out and at least keep them under plastic.
Yeah, it's called the Poison Book Project, if you want to maybe Google that. There were people that I guess just quickly, the arsenic eaters of Styria. I know we're jumping around in time frames of human history, sure. But I mean, this is crazy. There were other things, and you guided me, and I greatly appreciate it. You guided me to a bunch of historical things of, you know, there were some people that thought arsenic was going to be, you know, it'd cure cancer, so to speak, or make your complexion better. And then the arsenic eaters of Styria. Talk briefly about that.
Well, this actually has some relevance to the upcoming trial of Dr. Craig. In the 1840s, James Marsh was an English chemist who developed a forensics test to determine if someone died from arsenic. So it's been over 200 years that we've been able to prove in court that someone died of arsenic poisoning. But as soon as the forensics test was introduced, the defense lawyers came up with the argument that, well, this person did have arsenic in him, but actually they were a toxicophagist. And what are the toxicophagi? Well, this was a group of peasants in Styria. Likely around the 1500s, they began feeding arsenic to horses. And they believed that the arsenic gave them health and increased their strength. And actually, up until 2013, we were feeding an arsenic compound to chickens because it does help with their immune system. But, you know, what's good for the horse, I guess, is good for the person. And some of these people started taking small amounts and were able to build up a tolerance to the arsenic so that they could take what would be a fatal dose of someone else and survive it. And they actually claimed that there were beneficial effects of arsenic. And when they stopped taking it, they would have withdrawal symptoms. So in many ways, starting in the 1600s up until about the 1800s, arsenic was a recreational drug.
Insanity. Just crazy. Dr. Michael Fricke is a leading expert on arsenic. He joins us here on our latest episode of our podcast, audio and video series. I want to get closer as we still are awaiting the preliminary hearing. I want to get more in-depth in some of your thoughts. I realize that these are your expert opinions and you're not speaking on behalf of an employer, and some of it may be even your opinion. But I believe, is it number 33 on the periodic table of elements?
Right below phosphorus.
Yeah, I learned that from you earlier in the week. What are the acute effects of arsenic to the human body?
So the acute effects are when you have a large dose all at once. This is opposite of the chronic effects, which are much more common. There are two mechanisms. First, the arsenic can bind to enzymes and contain thiol groups. This is an enzyme that has a sulfur hydrogen group sticking out. And then arsenate can also mimic phosphate and inhibit the production of ATP, which is the body's method of storing energy.
When you look at, and we have a slide aptly titled Acute Effects, and you know, I look at this and violent abdominal pain, vomiting, bloody diarrhea, excessive salivation. You know, we have yet to see even preliminary autopsy results for Angela Craig. Just earlier this week, I was in contact with the Arapahoe County Coroner's Office, and they guided me to a press release and their only statement that was dated March 22nd, and it was right after Angela Craig's autopsy. And of course, these things, as you well know, they take many, many weeks, et cetera. But I know you know the story, like so many others. This has gained international attention. I can tell you through reading and talking with sources that abdominal pain, vomiting, severe headaches, all of those were experienced by Angela Craig in each of her three local hospital visits. What does it sound like to you? How do you interpret, are these obviously, in your opinion, signs that this is a potential? And of course, the allegations are on February 27th, Dr. Craig ordered arsenic metalloid on the web, Amazon.com, for $13. So kind of, I know it's a lot, but kind of unpack that for me, if you would.
Sure. I actually was able to find that same compound being sold on eBay. And one of the reasons that I decided to reach out is that this is very unusual. So the chemical that Dr. Craig allegedly ordered is not the arsenic oxide that has been used throughout history as a poison. It's a different form of arsenic. It's the elemental form of arsenic, arsenic metal. And the difference between that and arsenic oxide, which is a white powder and tasteless and doesn't have a smell and dissolves in drinks, is that granules of arsenic metal would be a dull gray metal and they wouldn't dissolve. So if it was in a protein shake, it would be you would be able to feel the texture of something like sand.
Would you describe it? And it has been, the word chalky was certainly in text messages, a chalky taste. I mean, I'm not trying to stretch here, but you know, if it would be gritty, I mean, could it? Is it conceivable that somebody would? With your expertise and what you're talking about, would that be maybe a sensation or a descriptor used if it were, in fact, in a protein shake?
Well, we have no idea because I could not find a single reference of anyone being poisoned or unintentionally eating arsenic metal. Mm-hmm. So we don't have any history to look back on and what happens with arsenic metal. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that arsenic metal is much less toxic than arsenic oxide, and it will not convert to arsenic oxide either in the acidic environment of the stomach, because the stomach has hydrochloric acid, and you need an oxidizing acid such as nitric acid to convert it to arsenic oxide. And it would also not be reactive in the basic environment of the intestines.
Mike, I want to ask you a question. After your appearance on our radio program, I got a text message from one of our listeners, and I thought this was at least, it was a decent question. I don't know with your expertise if you may think it's not a decent question, but it was posed to me after your appearance on the program radio-wise that, well, is there anything in a dentist's office that could take that arsenic metal or metalloid and convert it to kind of some of the things you're talking about? Would you know?
So you would convert it with nitric acid. And I don't believe that nitric acid is something that they keep in a dentist's office. I also don't believe that this could be easily done.
And yet the allegations are what they are. What, this is where I may be asking you a little bit of your opinion.
Okay.
I don't know if you have read any or all of the arrest affidavit, but certainly in the mainstream media and the international coverage, you know, there are allegations that Dr. Craig from dental exam room number 9 here in Colorado at Summerbrook Dental in Aurora earlier this year, that he searched things like how many grams of arsenic does it take to kill a human and a couple of those searches. many people have told me on and off the record that this just doesn't seem very smart, that the tracks weren't covered, et cetera. Once again, he is innocent until proven guilty. But I'm just wondering of you seeing, almost just as an outside news consumer like all of us, what are you thinking when you see those types of searches?
Well, to me, it doesn't make sense. We're talking about, you know, an educated man here. He went to a lot of school to become a dentist. And I would imagine that a search like that would be done either from an internet cafe or a burner phone where, right, you know, there would be no history. And it's almost like it's being served up to the police.
And the other allegations are oleander oil pills, which can, you know, in doses can be certainly fatal. The allegations of the order, again off the internet, of potassium cyanide delivered on a Friday. He tells one of the office workers, according to the arrest affidavit, don't open this box. Well, as I've said even on this series, whoops, somebody else did open that. And then that, it, to me, is really where the house of cards started to tumble, because then the business partner is informed, et cetera, et cetera. But talk about potassium cyanide, because the way I read, and I could be completely wrong, but the way I read it is the potassium cyanide was intercepted and there would have been really no way for a dose of potassium cyanide to be given to Angela Craig. And yet we're also hearing your expert opinion on, well, it doesn't sound like there's a lot of history to back arsenic metalloid poisoning someone. What about, just for educational purposes, what about potassium cyanide?
So potassium cyanide is another interesting case. Do you remember in the 1980s it was added to Tylenol? And
sure.
Seven people around Chicago died from that?
Right, the Tylenol scare.
Right. The potassium cyanide would kill someone in minutes. A very small amount would stop the lung muscles from breathing, and they would die within minutes. From what I understand, Angela Craig was brain dead. And that does not sound to me like potassium cyanide poisoning.
Yeah. And, you know, not only your expert opinion and your experience, but it just doesn't add up. And again, from all indications are that potassium cyanide order, if you will, that arrived at Summerbrook Dental was quote unquote intercepted. Just a few more questions. Again, our guest is one of the nation's foremost experts in arsenic. I want to go back in history, because even on alleged web searches by Dr. Craig, there are searches that led him to websites that gave almost, I don't even know what to say, almost romanticizing the use of arsenic. For example, being used in a part of a plot line in murder mystery writings. And, you know, arsenic and old lace is... Well, to me, the first film that I think of Hollywood-wise when it comes to arsenic. But how did it get to the way we in 2023 think about arsenic? And we've gone back 3300 BC, but, you know, how did it get to be in these novels? And, you know, I guess so intriguing to so many people.
Well, the arsenic eaters were you know, the popular story in the 1800s, and this led to... people being interested in arsenic. There was Sears used to sell arsenic wafers that you could pat on your cheeks and it would remove the kill some of the blood vessels, and you would get more of a, you know, white skin, which was fashionable at the time because it showed you didn't have to work outside. So it was a fashionable thing to wear clothes that were made with arsenic dyes and use arsenic containing makeups.
However, there's a point, right, where it is this nefarious member of the periodic table of elements. The untraceability. I mean, I've even read, because of what you were so kind to forward me, it apparently, and I know you don't know this, nor do I, but it apparently tastes sweet. It tastes sweet. Talk about that.
Yeah. So one of the reasons that it was so useful for killing mice and rats is it apparently has a little bit of a sweet taste. So one of the names for the white arsenic, the arsenic oxide, is rat's bane. And they would use it on ships to control the rat populations. My grandmother actually told me that her father would sprinkle white arsenic around their tomato plants in the ground. And it was used as a pesticide up until the 19th century.
Just crazy. As we wrap up this episode of our video and audio podcast, again, beginning of June, a little less than a month away, the preliminary hearing at the Arapaho County Justice Center for Dr. James Craig. That is when the judge will determine whether or not there is enough evidence to hold this, my former dentist, over for a trial on allegations of murder, that he killed his wife. And the allegations, as you well are aware, that he poisoned her to death via arsenic. That remains to be seen. And as we record this, still no preliminary or firm autopsy report. The couple of other questions I want as we wrap up, Mike, is there is something that a lot of people have said to me, both, again, on the record and off the record. She was in the hospital, Angela Craig was, three different times. They did not test for poisoning, and the story goes, and I believe it because I have good sourcing on this, that it was the business partner at the bedside of a nearly or completely brain-dead Angela Craig that pulled a nurse aside at University Hospital and said, have you all checked for poisoning? And she, as a first responder, the nurse calls the Aurora Police Department. But with something like this, just your opinion, if there is something that's baffling, you know, the experts, medical doctors, multiple visits to hospitals, and in Angela Craig's case, Parker Adventist Hospital and University Hospital, do you think that doctors, and I'm not trying to put any blame on them, but that in something that is just so puzzling, should they almost automatically test, well, let's see if there was poison involved?
I would be surprised if they did. Most of them have probably never seen a case of poisoning or know anyone who has from arsenic. It's exceedingly rare.
And talk about is it the Marsh test?
Right, so the Marsh test was the first forensics test that was ever developed in the 1840s. And it was kind of an ingenious setup. You take a sample and you react it with nitric acid and zinc. And this liberates a gas called arsine, which is arsenic and three hydrogens. The gas arsine travels through a tube where you ignite it. Arsenic burns with a purple flame, and if you hold a piece of glass up to the flame, it will deposit what's known as an arsenic mirror, the shiny metallic arsenic. And then this piece of glass could then be taken in to the courtroom and said, here, this is proof that this person had arsenic in them.
Would you say that there's definitely been a test like that, whether it's called the Marsh test or not, perhaps in the autopsy of Angela Craig?
So they would test for arsenic either using an instrument called inductively coupled plasma mass spectrometry or another one, which is atomic absorbance. And my guess is that they probably would use inductively coupled plasma mass spectrometry, and maybe have even sent it to Quantico and FBI headquarters. Hmm.
Two more quick questions, Mike, and I hope to have you on the podcast series once again. And again, thank you for your time. I want to know, this is your opinion again. Yeah. Should anything with, and I'm not about more rules, more government intervention, more following the book and people telling us what we can't do because maybe they feel we're irresponsible. With that said, though, should anything containing arsenic, whether it's a metalloid or any other variation, should that be just easily available via eBay or Amazon.com, in your opinion?
Well, I'm a libertarian, so I definitely would, restrict the government's ability to prevent people from having what they need as long as they're not hurting someone else.
Yeah, that's a good answer, and I certainly respect that. Finally, do you feel that right now, from the way, again, from your professional and personal opinions and your knowledge, right now, would you say that if they are trying to pin the murder of Angela Craig on her husband, Dr. James Craig, and the affidavit says what it does, and hey, look, he ordered this and it was for $13 and it's this arsenic 99.9999% crystalline metalloid or whatever it is. Do they have their work cut out for them to try to prove that?
So I'll go out on a limb here and make a prediction that arsenic is not determined to be the cause of death. And we'll see if I'm right or not. The thing about the whole The podcast that caught my attention more than anything was that Dr. Craig gave his wife a blood pressure, oxygen monitors, and was really concerned with her vitals. And it seems to me that he was almost expecting something to happen and not understanding why it didn't, just from reading the text messages that you heard. Right. I think that is more damning than the arsenic metal, which I don't know would kill someone. I don't know that anyone knows that. So,
I can't thank you enough, Dr. Michael Fricke, for your time, arsenic expert, and we'll have you on the podcast series again. As I mentioned at the top, it is not lost upon Dr. Fricke or myself that there are 6 children involved and that the friends and family of Angela Craig are still mourning her death. If you can, find on GoFundMe, find the Angela Pray Craig Children's Fund as they get closer to their $100,000 goal. And again, thank you to our guest, Dr. Michael Fricke. We'll be back soon with another episode, audio and video, in this podcast series as we every day get closer to Dr. James Craig's preliminary hearing in Arapahoe County, Colorado. For our producer, Mark Crowley, I'm Stephen Tubbs. Thank you so much for your interest, and we'll talk to you next time.